Thank you, Sia, for this kind introduction. Ladies and gentlemen, parliamentarians from mainland Finland and the Åland Islands, other dignitaries, colleagues, dear friends. It's very nice to be here today and speak about the topic that surrounds the robustness and longevity of the Åland Islands model or example. And I should try to do so, but first I want to thank the organizers for inviting me to this occasion, also to congratulate the organizers for launching today this very fine book on the Åland Islands autonomy. In fact, I feel a little obligation to explain that I was actually invited to write an article to that book, but I had to decline it. And I'm very sorry for that now when I see the fine book. I had to decline it in order to be able to produce my own book.
You weren't certain about the result.
I was more certain about your result than my own book. Anyway, I will try to talk about some conceptual issues that would perhaps pinpoint a certain kernel of autonomy. I will also talk about Åland Islands in a comparative setting, and finally I will talk about eight forms of entrenchment, which I think in part at least explain the robustness of the Åland Islands system. Starting with the conceptual distinctions, I departed in my research from two like old concepts. On the first hand, classical notions of federalism or federation represented by the United States, and then an odd example in the autonomy heaven, which is the Memel territory that existed between the First and the Second World War, singled out with the letters MT in that chart. And in that comparison, I found that the classical federation is characterized by the fact that the substate entity, the state in a federation, is represented institutionally in the federal structure, in an upper chamber or in a Senate, as Massachusetts is represented in the Senate of the United States. However, at the same time, the substate entity, like Massachusetts in the United States, has only residual powers of lawmaking, which may be overridden by the federal lawmaker. That is the reverse with the sub-state entity, which I want to call territorial autonomy, like the Memel territory. There, in Memel territory, the territory itself was not represented institutionally. Yes, through elections normally, but not institutionally in the parliament of Lithuania. But on the other hand, Memel territory had exclusive lawmaking powers of its own, which the Lithuanian parliament could not interfere in. So we see here this mirror image, the reverse mirror image of a federal system working in this territorial autonomy setting. From that point of view, I started then to compare different existing autonomies, in fact six of them, including the Åland Islands, and found that in fact we can certainly single out a core group of territorial autonomies, including the Åland Islands, Hong Kong, with the risk of being violently opposed by Professor Guy, and for instance Zanzibar, also mentioned earlier today. And all of these sub-state entities which are in that blue circle on the screen, they are characterized by the fact that they are not the subject of any sort of a supremacy doctrine or preemption doctrine from the central government of the country. However, in a federal setting, that the preemption doctrine or the supremacy doctrine would be the case. Like, for instance, in the US, federal law sets aside state law if there's conflict, and as in the German constitution, Bundesrecht bricht Landesrecht. That federal core element of how to treat sub-state legislation does not apply in territorial autonomies of an ordinary kind. And that's why I'm putting up that blue circle there, including the Åland Islands in the middle. I think from that point of view, it's interesting to say that there are, of course, also other sub-state entities which are often featured in lists of territorial autonomies, like Scotland. However, today, the British Parliament could, in theory, at least, revoke any piece of law that the Scottish Parliament has enacted, and could do so also, in fact, as concerns the entire Scotland Act. However, the British Parliament has, under the Constitutional Convention called the Sewell Convention, promised not to do so. The British Parliament has promised to behave nicely towards Scotland, and I hope this will continue. It has done so. But Scotland is already at the fringes of territorial autonomy, and even more so when we talk about Puerto Rico in the United States. That certainly is already beyond anything that the Åland Islanders could imagine, because the US Congress could, under its plenary powers, and unlike in its relationship to any other state, the US Congress could pass any law that is that is applicable in the Puerto Rican constitutional context. They could even set aside the Puerto Rican constitution, just with the snap of their fingers. And at the bottom of the heap, I should say, a bit surprisingly from a Finnish perspective, perhaps, we find Aceh, which caught a lot of interest here when President Ahtisaari negotiated this peace deal between the Jakarta government and the Free Aceh movement. There is only the problem that still today the exact distribution of powers is negotiated between Jakarta and Banda Aceh. It's not still settled. There's a draft that has existed for 2 or 3 years now, and the point is that this exact distribution of powers between Jakarta and Banda Aceh will be passed through a presidential decree of Indonesia, a very low level of protection for the autonomy. So we are looking at very different situations here, and I should say Åland Islands is featured in a very nice group here together with Hong Kong and Zanzibar in areas, territorial autonomies, where the supremacy principle does not work. The Finnish Parliament cannot at all enact any piece of law that would apply in the Ålandic jurisdiction. And if a court of law would find that there is a Finnish piece of law that somebody tries to implement in the Åland Islands, that would be just thrown out of the window. So the jurisdictions are mutually exclusive in Finland. And that's, of course, something which is interesting from the next point of view, which in a way draws on the powers in combination of the level of normative rules that establish the autonomy. Of course, we have territorial autonomies that are established at the level of the constitution, and we have some which are just established at the level of ordinary law of the state. In the other dimension, we have sub-state entities that have lawmaking powers proper, while we have sub-state entities also which only have like administrative powers of some sort. And with this comparison, we can see that the Åland Islands is certainly placed among those sub-state entities which have which has the should I say most protected established position by way of being established in the constitution and also in a self-government act of a constitutional nature, at the same time as the lawmaking powers of the Åland Islands are exclusive in relation to the lawmaking powers of the Finnish Parliament in the Ålandic jurisdiction and in those areas where the Åland Islands are competent to enact legislation. The situation is different, of course, in a number of other entities, and I will not go into the comparison further. However, one feature that would explain, in my opinion, the robustness of the Ålandic example is that the Åland Islands solution is entrenched in the legal order of Finland in a number of ways. I can single out 8 different forms of entrenchment, and I would submit that the Åland Islands is entrenched in 4 ways out of these 8 forms of entrenchment, which of course fixes the Åland Islands very, very solidly in the legal order, not only of Finland, but also of the European Union and Europe in general. But I will not go over these different entrenchment forms right now, but just point at the fact that they exist and they are very important in solidifying the position of the Åland Islands as a special jurisdiction in the state of Finland, which in principle is a unitary state. And these entrenchment forms may be debated, but I think still the point would be that the more entrenchment there is, or the more of these entrenchment forms that are used for the solidifying of the position of territorial autonomy, the better. It would be more difficult then for the central state to abolish the autonomy arrangement at the same time as the substate entity itself and the population living in the substate entity would be able to trust on the permanent nature of the substate arrangement. Finally, conclusions on the Åland Islands. As was pointed out in the morning session, the international guarantees that the League of Nations passed in 1921, they are not carved in stone, but can be and in fact have been changed several times over. Some of these, and interestingly, some of these international guarantees have in fact been changed by the lawmaker of the Åland Islands itself. Some of these guarantees have been amended or modified through membership of the Åland Islands in the European Union. But in all these instances, what we can see is that the consent of the Åland Islands of its lawmaking assembly has been required. Of course, we know that the international guarantee through the League of Nations has disappeared through the dissolution of the organization, but the other ones exist and have been modified to some extent. At the same time, and I'm just about to conclude, at the same time, it should also be recognized that not all the special rights of the Åland Islanders stem from the Åland Islands settlement brokered before the League of Nations in 1921. In fact, some of those particular rights or special rights of the Åland Islanders have been created by the national lawmaker, by the Parliament of Finland, in the most generous manner. I think I would like to underline this. It's not only the international guarantee. Also the Parliament of Finland has certainly contributed to developing the position of the Åland Islands outside of the frames of the settlement. The effect of, in fact, realizing the pledge of the Council of the League of Nations on the 24th of June of 1921, that the guarantees that were to be negotiated in the next few days should contribute to the prosperity and happiness of the inhabitants of the Åland Islands. I think certainly we can see that that has taken place. But having said that, this is not the heaven of human rights necessarily. The Åland Islands, as any substate entity, in fact, is also at the same time the state from the point of view of human rights. And as the state, any public authority, public organization may also violate human rights. Åland Islands is, even if we think that it's all very positive and smooth and mellow here. Nonetheless, Åland Islands is the state from the point of view of human rights and might, in the course of action of exercising public authority, violate human rights of individuals, as has taken place, for instance, in a famous case where a dog cage was a bit misplaced on the property of somebody, and there was a prolonged process that ended up with the European Court of Human Rights in the case of Ekholm versus Finland. But having said this, my final assessment is nonetheless that the aims of the League of Nations in 1921 have been realized. There is prosperity and happiness in the Åland Islands. Thank you very much.